which is State versus Paulson. You may approach. Mr. Fern, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Eric William Fern with Berry Law Firm on behalf of Larry Paulson. May it please the court, opposing counsel, ladies and gentlemen. It was not until Mr. Olson's statement this morning that I understood the significance of hearing this case today on Law Day. In talking about the First Amendment and the Constitution, it became apparent that Mr. Paulson's case is quite appropriate for today. Mr. Paulson was convicted of driving under the influence, second offense. As part of his terms and conditions of probation, he was prohibited from having firearms, ammunition, and associating with individuals with firearms and ammunition. That original decision and sentence was not appealed. However, in August of 2018, Mr. Paulson filed a motion with the district court that was stipulated by the county attorney asking to have the court remove the term and condition from his probation. Under Nebraska law, a probationer is afforded the ability to later petition the court post-sentencing to remove a condition and term of probation.
Before the district court, were there any constitutional grounds raised for modifying the terms and conditions of probation?
No, Your Honor. The matter proceeded without a hearing ex parte following the stipulated motion. If in this situation, because the state has raised the issue of the court's jurisdiction, it's an appropriate point to address both jurisdiction and then a follow-up from your question. There was no hearing afforded to Mr. Paulson and his attorney. Nebraska statute does allow for the court to exercise its discretion under plain error if the court were to do so. In this situation, we can go directly to the court's exercise of discretion with or without a hearing. As Nebraska law, when a court is, under Nebraska law, when a court is imposing a term and condition of probation, it is done so with the intent of essentially encouraging and enforcing that probationer to lead a law-abiding life and also to comply with the terms and conditions of probation. The legislature has enumerated a number of permissible actions in which a judge can incorporate into a probation order.
Could I direct your attention to 29.2262i, or is it a 1, right? That's where you're going.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what does the statute say?
The statute essentially says that it starts out upon the conviction of a felony, the court can condition the restriction of firearms from a probationer, or in relation to other offenses, can prohibit a probationer from possessing a firearm without the permission of the court.
So the introductory part is to possess no firearm or other dangerous weapon if convicted of a felony. Is this a felony?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, or other dangerous weapon unless granted written permission by the court.
Correct. And the motion was submitted as a motion to modify the terms and conditions of the probation under Nebraska Revised Statute 29-2263, subsection 3. Essentially, Mr. Paulson was requesting the removal and permanent permission for him to obtain retain and use and be in possession of firearms.
Counsel.
Yes, sir.
At that point, when the application was filed for modification, the sentence of probation had already become final and no appeal had been taken. At that point, the prohibition against firearms was already in place. So far, so good?
Yes, Your Honor.
At that point, what substantial right was affected by the refusal of the trial court to modify?
Yes, Your Honor. In determining the substantial right, the court looks at the framework, whether a litigant has a right or a defense which is going to be affected or foreclosed by the court's action. That's not verbatim, but my paraphrase of the term. Because the Nebraska legislature affords a probationer a statutory right to later petition the court to modify probation, there is a legal right in which a probationer has to prosecute or to seek an outcome.
Isn't that a procedural right, not a substantial right?
In this situation, it's not a technical right because the court affords an actual, it's discretionary with the probationer. The probationer has the right post-sentencing to later go back and seek a modification. In this situation, he was seeking the modification of a term or condition that restricted firearms, which is a fundamental right under Nebraska's constitution.
Well, but my point was, by that point, he'd already given up by not taking an appeal that fundamental right. Isn't that true?
Yes, Your Honor. But then, if there's no right of appeal following a motion to modify, which is provided by statute, then essentially a motion to modify becomes an appealable order if there's no substantial
did
right.
Did he have a right for the term of probation to be an accurate statement of the law?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Did he have a right for the term of probation to be an accurate statement of the law?
Yes, the statute affords the ability to restrict the firearms throughout the duration of probation, and Nebraska law is clear that that is not disturbed unless it is an abuse of discretion. In this situation, where we are believing there was an abuse of discretion is because even though this was a post-judgment modification action, it still ultimately affected his fundamental right to bear arms, and that the court was required to engage in a heightened analysis on whether it was appropriate to continue to deny Mr. Paulson the ability to bear arms.
Counsel, when the court pronounced a sentence of probation, with everyone present in the courtroom, the judge went through the terms and conditions of that probation, correct?
In the sentencing hearing, most of them, not the one at issue, but yes, in
what,
the order.
What is the effect of that? If the oral pronouncement is different than the later written pronouncement, what's our rule? What's our governing principle?
Well, the written order would be the final order from which you would appeal.
But if there is a discrepancy between the pronouncement and the written order, which governs?
It would be the written order, if I'm not mistaken, Your Honor. You'll have to forgive my ignorance on that. Getting back to it, I think the state brings up State v. Volchek, and that was the one case that I've been able to find that addresses a somewhat similar issue. And I believe this case is won or lost potentially on whether the court can identify a substantial right that constitutes a final appealable order. And I wanted to take some time to address Volchek to show that it is substantially dissimilar from what we have here. In that case, Mr. Volchek was given a discretionary sentence. The hearing on the discretionary sentence was set for later on that year. During that time, he was essentially given an opportunity to convince the court why it should not be entered against him. He filed no subsequent motions with the court, took no action before the court, and essentially waited for his sentencing date. Unfortunately, in the interim, he committed similar offenses for which he was originally found guilty, and unsurprisingly, the court decided that it was not going to levy a lenient sentence on Mr. Volchek. In this situation, the fundamental difference is the legislature provides a statutory remedy for a probationer to seek to modify the terms and conditions of his probation. Mr. Paulson sought that remedy. It's a statutory remedy, and the basis of that remedy is the fundamental right to bear arms, which, based on State versus Rieger, requires a heightened analysis.
So if we were to get to the, merits, what would be your argument about why this was an abuse of discretion?
The The principal argument is while the considerations by the district court are legitimate, the record does not establish how prohibiting Mr. Paulson from having firearms furthers any one of those interests. His own probation officer, as set forth in the motion, agreed with it. The state agreed with it. So probationer safety, remaining a law-abiding citizen, those were all not considerations that, while in a general sense are very important, haven't been shown by the record.
Did the record show a history of violence?
May I answer that, Your Honor?
You may.
Okay. I'm sorry, what was the question again?
Did the record show a history of violence by the defendant?
There's nothing before the record there's no record of a history of violence at all. There's one prior conviction for driving under the influence. But there's no record of a history of violence before the court in the record.
If we were to decide that the Rieger heightened scrutiny standard doesn't apply because it was not raised before the trial court, do you have an argument that the condition nonetheless was an abuse of discretion?
Yes, Your Honor. Even under the traditional abuse of discretion standard, when you look at the abuse of discretion, if it's clearly against the evidence, under the traditional abuse of discretion standard, you still come back to the argument that the goals of probation and the goals that were identified by the district court judge have not been shown to necessarily apply to Mr. Paulson's situation and how prohibiting guns furthers that. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Ms. Duffy, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Appellant argues the district court erred in denying his motion to modify a condition of his probation. However, before the court reaches the merits of that underlying appeal, it must first determine whether it has jurisdiction. And the state submits that this court is without jurisdiction, and we ask that you dismiss this appeal for that reason. In the alternate, should this court disagree and find it does have jurisdiction to hear this case, we request you affirm the judgment of the district court. I'll begin by addressing jurisdiction. This court's case law and state statute provides that the three types of orders that may be reviewed on appeal are orders which first must affect a substantial right and which determine an action or prevent a judgment, are made during a special proceeding, or are made on summary application in an action after a judgment is rendered. This court has further stated that a substantial right is an essential legal right, not merely a technical right, and that an order affects a substantial right if it affects the subject matter of the litigation, such as diminishing a claim or defense that was available to the appellant prior to the order from which he is appealing. The state submits that the order denying the motion to modify appellant's probation did not affect a substantial right. The term appellant wished to have removed from his order of probation was put into place at the time the probation order was entered. He chose not to appeal the sentence, and thus he never challenged his conviction and his sentence of probation. Months later, appellant asked the district court to remove the specific term of his probation after the time for a direct appeal had passed and after it had already been in effect for many months.
Were there any changed circumstances alleged?
Your Honor, I do not believe that appellant's motion alleged any changed circumstances. Specifically, his motion, this is page 32 of the transcript, just noted that this had been in effect, that it kind of went through what appellant discussed with you, his prior history. Really, the only big change was that number 5 of his motion notes that he'd always been a collector of different firearms, that he had always been in possession of them in his residence, and that that room where he kept them had recently been locked up by probation. So really, the only change was...
Is it your position that there is no appeal from a rejection of a modification request on probation?
Your Honor, I don't know that there could never be a situation where an appeal might be appropriate. I think that in this case, in cases like this, where we have a term that has been in place for months, was not appealed, where there's been no significant change in the position of the parties or maybe the position of the probationer's life or There's simply been no change. There was nothing different from when the order was put into effect to...
So is it your position that if there is a change, it is appealable?
Depending on the change, Your Honor. I think, again, this court would look at whether there has been a substantial right at issue. And I think here, there's been no change. I don't think that every little change would suddenly turn an issue into a substantial right. I think that there possibly could be some conceivable...
So what is the position of law that this court should take so that people in the future would know whether or not this is appealable?
Your Honor, I think that in a situation like this, where the term being appealed is a term that has been in effect, that was under the original probation order, I suppose in this case specifically we have the probation order was not appealed and that term was not challenged. But in any event, a term that's been in effect where there's been no substantial change either in, I suppose, the law or the position of the parties or the life of the probationer, then there is not a substantial right.
Would it matter
at issue
that the term of probation is inconsistent with the statute?
Well, Your Honor, on that point, I will direct you to 29-2262 subsection 2R, which notes that the court can also order the probationer to satisfy any other conditions reasonably related to the rehabilitation of the offender. So I think that
so
does...
If you would say then, therefore, the judge did this because it was reasonably related to the rehabilitation of the defendant. Is that your position?
I believe that that is what the court
did. And is there a record that would show this either one way or another?
We
like
don't...
Such as the history of violence and so forth.
No, Your Honor. I believe that at the sentencing hearing, the district court stated that the usual terms and conditions would apply, and then those were enumerated in the probation order. And I think...
And did not recite this particular term.
That is correct. I don't recall, to Justice Stacey's point, I don't believe that a lot of the terms and conditions, from my recollection of the sentencing hearing, that not a lot of them were read out, or that not the entire probation order, which was several pages long, was not read into the record.
So this is a misdemeanor, not a felony, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And to our knowledge, there's no history of a felony with this defendant. Is that right?
Based on the appellant's motion to modify the term, that's correct. But I don't think that simply because there's no history of that the district court could not order it. And I suppose if then we get into, should this court disagree and find that there is jurisdiction to review this order, I think that what's actually at issue is not whether the term was properly put into place in the first instance. The issue is whether the district court erred in not removing or modifying that term.
And the basis of that was what? To the refusal.
To the refusal. The district court in its order reviewed reasons that terms like that are put into place. So for example, the safety of the public, the safety of the probation officer, to allow the probation officer to be able to go in and supervise the probationer without the risk of safety that can be caused by firearms.
So what do you make of the factual situation in this case where the probation officer apparently approved of the change?
Well, Your Honor, I think that then we kind of get into this interesting issue because as we all know, sometimes that probation officer may, the probation officer supervising the appellant may have changed. So if at some point we have a probation officer that says, this is a typical condition, I'm more comfortable with this, I feel my safety's at risk.
That's a hypothetical.
That's correct, Your Honor. Well, I think on that note, Your Honor, I would point out that while appellant characterized the state as stipulating to the removal, I believe that the actual motion, the state simply noted it did not object, which I do think is different than actually stipulating.
It was drafted by defense counsel.
I believe it says that the state checked this little box that said they do not object to the motion. So,
but probation orders are a form of sentence, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And we in Nebraska do not allow parties to control a judge's discretion as to sentencing by agreement or otherwise.
That's correct, Your Honor. And this court has stated that probation, it's not a negotiation or a quasi-contract. It's a sentence.
And even if the original term of probation did not verbatim track the statutory provision that most closely resembled it, it would have been at most erroneous, but not void.
Correct, Your Honor.
And when no appeal was taken, that's that.
It took effect. And that's why the state's position would be that if this court were to disagree and find that this was a substantial right, what's actually at issue is not that underlying term, because that could have been appealed and it was not. What is at issue is whether the district court erred in not modifying or removing that term. And while not noted in the district court's order, I think this court can take into account that in appellant's motion, he stated he's always been in possession of these weapons, which the state interprets to mean that he's had them the entire time he's been on probation and supposed to have been prohibited from having them. So I don't think that the district court abuses discretion in not modifying this term when there were reasons noted such as public safety, probation officer safety, and when we look at the motion itself, which seems to indicate that appellant had been in violation of this probation order the entire time, and now that he was being held to the to comply with probation, that is when he saw the change. So rather than modifying his behavior to conform with the terms of his probation,
the state should have brought a proceeding for violation of probation.
I think they very well could have. I don't know what decisions were made about that, or if how aware the state was. Clearly, it would appear that if that room where the firearms were kept had only recently been locked up at the time that the order was filed, I don't know how aware the other parties involved were that these firearms were still in the home and accessible.
What is your response to the constitutional argument?
Well, Your Honor, I think that constitutional argument would have been brought on direct appeal when the actual term itself was at issue. But I think now, if this court does reach the merits of this underlying appeal, it's no longer about whether his right to firearms is affected by the probation order. It's about whether his right to have the term modified has been affected. So I think that argument would have, we would have been discussing that at length on direct appeal, but where we are now.
But we're asking you to comment on it.
Well, Your Honor, I don't.
He's not a felon.
Your Honor, I think, again, I point to subsection R on that probation order that says that a district court or a sentencing court can put in terms and conditions necessary.
And is there a reasonable relation between the firearm restriction and the crime to which he pled?
Your Honor, there's no evidence that there was a firearm involved, but the terms and conditions of probation do not have to be all tied in to the specific.
In a constitutional analysis, it's customary, right, to refer to the reasonable relation of the term of probation if, let's say, for sake of argument, there is a constitutional right at issue, like the right to bear arms under the federal or state constitutions.
This court in Rager did note that, and there it was right to the right of communication between a married couple.
If you were to explore that, then what is the reasonable relationship of this term of probation to the drug
driver? Well, Your Honor, again, I just come back to, I don't think that we can get there, and I guess I'm not fully prepared to comment on that issue today because I feel that it's not an issue, that even if this court reaches the merits of the underlying appeal, it is not his constitutional right to bear arms, that would have been an analysis that this court, we would have to determine whether that right to bear arms is subject to that stricter scrutiny in Rieger. I believe this court.
If the cases say it's subject to either strict scrutiny or a middle level scrutiny, mm-hmm. What would be your answer?
Well, I think, I suppose it depends on what we take into account. If we're taking into account everything that we know since he's been put on probation, which is that he clearly has a problem following orders of the court, specifically as they relate to firearms, then I think that that term, because he's been in violation of it the entire time, then I think that the court was correct in keeping that term in place.
Does the Nebraska Constitution give individuals a greater right to bear arms than the federal Constitution?
I believe our Constitution is equal with the federal, but I may be mistaken.
Is there a reference to the militia in the state constitution's right to bear arms, which I think was commenced by an initiative in Rossville in 1988?
Your Honor, I do not recall if there is a reference to the militia, and I see that I'm out of time unless there are specific questions from this court.
Did the motion to modify contain a constitutional challenge in it?
I do not believe that it had the constitutional I don't see it in here, Your Honor, but this is just a quick read. But I don't believe that it referenced the Constitution in it. But this court will obviously be able to look and tell me if I'm incorrect. Unless there are other questions, we ask you to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction or in the alternate affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Cozy.